This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 100. That's right, 100, our first three-digit episode of the Observe Tech podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com. It is great to be with you on this 100th episode weekend. I want to remind everybody before we jump into everything that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's there, so check out techpodcast.com. So episode 100, it hasn't taken us too long to get here, and I'm going to give you a little bit of history. This show's going to be a little bit different because we're going to talk a lot about the show, how it came to be, when it started, some of our more popular episodes, and some other tidbits about the show itself, how I do it, how I put it together, and things like that. But it is a special edition. It is a special episode 100. So we got a little bit of a giveaway here. All right. So what I have is I have one $50 and two $25 Amazon gift certificates. Now, these will be electronic. So as long as you can accept a gift certificate, you are eligible to win one of these three prizes to celebrate our 100th episode. And if you didn't do the math, that's $100 for our 100th episode. But we got three gifts, one big one of 50 and two 25s. So if you're interested in this, here's how it's going to work. Somewhere in this podcast, there is a secret code that is going to be said by me. All right. When you hear that secret code, I need you to email that to me at 100, the letters O-N-E, 100, H-U-N-D-R-E-D, at WindowsObserver.com. Now, this will be on the show page, so you'll be able to copy the email from there. And you have to email me the secret code to that address to be eligible for the drawing for one of the three gift certificates. Now, there's only one entry per person, and the winners will be announced on episode 102, which will be in 2 weeks. So once you got to listen to the show, you don't know where that secret code's going to pop up at. And obviously, your chances are much improved that you don't share where that secret code is, because the more people who know it, the more people get to mail in. So people need to listen to the show to find the secret code, okay? So a little bit of history about the Observe Tech podcast. It actually began back on 17 November of 2009. Now, if your math is right, that is somewhere in the ballpark. Let's see, it's 2013, 4 years ago this November. So it's taken us a bit of a while to get to 100, and there's good reasons for that. I was still on active duty in the U.S. Navy, so my recording was very inconsistent and irregular. It was just the nature of the beast with my job and things that I was doing, my travel schedule and things of that nature. But we did a fairly routine schedule of things. It just nothing was set in stone. Not like it has been the last 2 years where we pretty much record every Thursday or at least weekly with some slight variations over the course of the last 2 years since I retired from the Navy. Now, that first program, we called it Beta Program 1. It was 6 minutes long. We called it Beta Program 1 because we were basically testing our gear. We were testing the podcaster unit that I had bought, which I'll talk about a little bit later. We were testing just the processing of the show, how I was going to put it together, the software I was going to use to put it together, how I was going to post it to the website, and all of that. So it really was just a quick opportunity to try everything out. 6 minutes long, the shortest show I ever recorded. And I don't record long shows. You guys know that. If you've been listening to me on a regular basis, you know that my shows are typically in that 45-minute range. I like to get in and give you the highlights and then move on out, because our time is valuable. And there's some really long podcasts out there. And if you've got time to listen to them at 2 hours plus, that's fine. But I don't want to be one of those that you feel like you have to. So I always shoot to keep it in that 45-minute range. But we've occasionally gone longer than that, gone to an hour. But that's usually associated with somebody being on the show with us and we're having a discussion. All right, so I'll put links to all these old shows in the show links page so that you can go back and check them out. Now, let's talk a little bit about the show stats in general. So, since November of 2009, we have been producing this podcast for 45 months, and that's an average of just over 2 episodes per month, with us sitting at episode 100 today. We have been regularly recording weekly since my retirement from the Navy in November of 2011, so almost 2 years ago. And there's been a couple of exceptions to that, and we said that. Now, let's talk about popular shows. We do have some shows that kind of float up to the top. Some of them, it's pretty obvious why. Some of them, it's just like, it's a regular episode. Not quite sure why it's in the top, but it is. So for 2013, this year so far, that means up through the end of July, the most popular show that has been listened to is actually episode 10 from way back in May of 2010 when we first started the show. And the primary subject of that show was about Facebook privacy changes and, of course, the closure of the Microsoft, what they called NMTP, which is Network News Protocol, is old Microsoft News Group servers. They were moving to web-based forums, and that was quite a tumultuous time when people didn't really want to move off the old news groups. So it was an interesting episode. It was the beginning of Facebook and privacy and, you know, the whole bit with privacy and stuff. And you can see now 3 years later how much privacy has blown up with everything that's going on. So episode 10 is the most popular show this year so far listened to. After that was episode 79, which was from earlier this year in February. And that show we talked about Surface Pro. Surface Pro had come out. The reviews were out. We had a huge episode just dedicated to Surface Pro and what was going on with it. So very popular episode there. The next most popular episode listened to this year is episode 12. Again, we're going back to July of 2010 now, and mainly that show was about internet safety, but it was also a return. We hadn't recorded for 40 days because, and I can only imagine it was related to my military duties and business travel and stuff like that. But July of 2010, it was we had not recorded a show in 40 days, and we were focused on internet safety in that episode 12. And then episode 40 from last February in 2012, it was just a run-of-the-mill, everyday kind of show, but it yet is still the fourth most popular listened to this year. I'm talking about January through July, okay? And then the number five most popular episode this year so far was episode 13. Again, we're going back to October of 2010, and you can see how that just worked, right? Episode 12 was in July of 2010. We had a 40-day gap. Then episode 13 came in October of 2010, so it was a three-month gap between shows right there. And this show was also focused on online safety and security, and it was a return after 3 months of not being able to record a show. So, you know, you guys have been extremely patient throughout the 4 years that we've been doing this and the ins and the outs. And for me, I'm just glad that we've been on a more consistent and regular basis now in the last 2 years that I've retired and able to put more focus into it. So let's look at last year as well and talk about the top five episodes there. And we go back to episode 10 again, that May 2010 show that was about Facebook privacy changes and the closure of the Microsoft News Group servers. Most listened to show last year in 2012. After that, we had episode 58. That was last July. It was a return from my vacation. My wife and I went to Italy to visit my wife's two sons, my stepsons. We were gone for 30 days, so there was that. That's probably the biggest gap we've had in the 2 years since I retired. And it was just a run-of-the-mill show, but it was our return from vacation show, and it was the second most popular last year. And then after that, we had episode 12 again, Internet Safety. It seems like safety shows tend to have a pretty strong listening, and some of them just don't go out of date. After episode 12, the fourth most listened to last year was from June of last year, and that was the Surface announcement. We had two big announcements in the course of 1 week, if you remember right, last year. We had the Surface announcement, right? The secret that nobody knew about that surprised everybody. Microsoft got everybody out to California to Milk Studios. It was under wraps. Everybody had a whole lot of ideas what it was, but we finally heard about Surface, and specifically Surface RT they were showing off, but they had Pro as well. So that created a lot of discussion. And also that same week, you had the Windows Phone 8 announcement, the new OS coming out for Windows Phone and all the enhancements it was going to have and everything. So very, very popular show last year. Episode 29 was the fifth most popular last year. That show dates back from November 2011. And again, when I went back to look at the show notes for that one, it's kind of a run-of-the-mill show, lots of different tech subjects and items we talked about. But it was just a kind of run-of-the-mill show, but it's proven to be very popular. So it gives you an idea of the popularity of some of the shows over the last 2 years. And it was fun to go back and look at those and pull up the data and see what you know, what was popular and what wasn't. Sometimes you just never know. You really don't ever know. Now let's talk a little bit about the show itself. You know my intro, right? My intro is very unique. I've had it since the first show. It hasn't changed in 100 episodes, and it will be. It's the intro on this show as well, and it's a bit of a countdown kind of thing. And that comes from my space stuff, my connection to the space community, to NASA, to Kennedy Space Center, and the participation I do in all kinds of related activities. And, of course, the countdown is very popular and a part of that. And so I decided to do my voice in over a countdown-related type of show. Now, did you know this, though? That voice that is on the intro, that voiceover is mine. It actually is. What I did was I use Audacity, which is a great open source piece of software for audio and editing and things like that. And I simply worked on the pitch adjustment. After I wrote the script for the intro, I worked on the pitch adjustment. I recorded it in my own voice. And then Audacity let me adjust the pitch and some other elements to make it not sound like me. Because at the time I was looking for a friend or somebody to do the voiceover. I didn't want it to be me. And I think it was on Twitter or something, somebody suggested I look at that option of Audacity, and I did, and it created a great intro, and in fact, it has surprised a lot of people to find out that that is actually my voice. Show length, as we've talked about earlier, with only a couple of exceptions, we always shoot for that 45-minute window. It's a primary goal of mine with the show. It has been from the early days. And I just try to always hit that 45-minute window because, again, I know time is valuable. I mean, many podcasting apps these days now give you the ability to speed up a show by 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And, of course, it changes the voices in the show, but it gets the information out and it's still understandable. So that, to me, says time is valuable to people. If they're willing to listen to a show in a squeaky mouse voice in order to listen to it faster because of its length, then I want to keep my show at a pace where you don't have to rush through it, that you can listen to the entire show in a normal pace and get it done. And, you know, a 45-minute drive somewhere or a walk, I've heard people tell me that I listen to your show while I walk the dog, I listen to your show while I ride the bus, I listen to your show during my commute period, or they sit at their desk and listen to it, or over lunch or something like that. And again, it's a window that allows them to listen to the entire thing without it having to stretch out beyond that point. So that, to me, if I'm getting that kind of feedback, that makes me very happy that I've got the timing down in a pretty good spot here on the show. Now, what do I use? I mentioned earlier that that beta program one, that first episode back in November of 2009, was so I could test out my podcast gear. Now, up to this point, I hadn't really messed around with podcasting. Like many of you, when you get a computer, it comes with a microphone, a set of headphones, you know, that very thin, skinny microphone. It's not very good sound quality. So when I really got serious about podcasting and I wanted to do a regular show, I knew that I needed to get a proper microphone, maybe a mixer box or something, and headphones to be able to do it properly, because the sound is important on an audio podcast, because it's the only connection that exists between you and the listener is your voice and the sound quality. So at the time, I picked up what was called a Technical Pro PM21. Great little introductory device. It was a USB-based system that plugged into power. It plugged in through a USB cord to your computer. The drivers would be installed, and you could feed two microphones into it. The kit came with one mic and a set of headphones. But I talked a little bit about it. I did an unboxing of it, and so I'll link you to the story about that. But you know, the headphones were a little bit very rough around the edges. And I mentioned it on Twitter, and the Technical Pro folks were listening and contacted me and offered to send me a second microphone and an upgraded set of headphones, which they did. And I still use those headphones today. I still use the same microphones today. Unfortunately, the Technical Pro 21 bit the dust. I guess it's been almost 2 years now. Next month will be 2 years since it bit the dust. The USB port died. And so I went shopping and looking and ultimately ended up with a Behringer Xenix 802, which is a premium 8-input 2-bus mixer. And I've been using that on the show since September of 2011. And I think if you go back and listen to shows prior to September of 2011 and listen to shows since then, you will find that the voice is much clearer. I've got much more granular level control of the sound and what's coming out of the box into the computer, into Audacity for the recording. So it's a great setup. And this thing is only about $60-$65, and it's more than enough for what I need. It's got four microphone inputs, or two microphone inputs, and then three auxiliary channels. So it's a terrific little setup. The price was right. And I picked that up off of Amazon. So a terrific piece of gear that allows me to do my show and get me the great quality. And the big difference with this compared to the PM21 is this box, this mixer has microphone preamp, which increases the clarity of the sound coming through the microphone. The recording and post-editing of the show I do on Audacity. Audacity is an awesome piece of open source audio and a sound editor. I used to record the show in chunks. I used to have what I called segments, and each story was a separate segment, and I was stopping and starting, stopping and starting, stopping and starting each segment. And then, of course, when the show was over, I had to go back and piece those all together. I had this neat little but-a-bump thing that would go in between stories, and that was cool, but it was labor-intensive to put that show together. So I forget what number episode it was, but I decided, you know what, I'm going to try this in one go. I am going to try to record this show from start to finish without having to stop or do anything like that. I pre-prepared my intro and my outro, and then I would just record the show in one breath. And not one breath, it seems like it sometimes when you're a one-man show, but I would record it in one setting. I've learned how to get more comfortable with pauses over that time. It's kind of weird, but you guys have heard me talk about it before. So it has turned into a much easier post-editing process because all I have to do is add the intro music and voiceover as well as the outro music, and then I've got the show put together. I save it, and I put in all the MP3 metadata for the show and the information and the description and the excerpt and all that kind of stuff. Since I am a WordPress-based site, I use the Blueberry PowerPress plugin, which is created by the folks at Blueberry, which my podcast is listed at Blueberry. And in fact, it's from Blueberry that I got picked up and invited to join the Tech Podcast Network. And it's a great plugin. It manages the media side for me. It puts the player in for me with the short code, and it just makes the process a whole lot easier. It helps with the stats because it puts the right data in front of the link to track listening stats and things of that nature. So extremely happy with the process. It's almost second nature now after 100 episodes, and it's a process I can move through fairly quickly once I get it going. Now, a typical week. What's it like to go through a typical week of preparation and getting ready to do a show like this? Well, one of the first things I do is I keep a pool of items that I share via Twitter. So you guys know that if you follow me on Twitter, I share average of 3 to 4 links every hour, spaced out every 15 minutes, of interesting tech-related stories. I do that through the Feedly cloud now since Google Reader's gone, and I've got a couple great apps called Next Gen Reader for Windows Phone and Windows 8 that I interface with Feedly on. And when I save an item there, it gets fed to Buffer, and then Buffer feeds it to Twitter. Well, that becomes my pool of stories that I'm going to talk about on the show. So I'll have those. They get downloaded from RSS into my Outlook, and then I use that to kind of dig through and pick the ones that I want to share with. And other things I might catch from Twitter or other websites that I might not see in one of my feeds, and I will add them as well. I also choose to include stories I've written on Windows Observer for the last week. I like the idea of being able to add words to what I wrote and talk about and expand the discussion a little bit. Written word is great, but I do like the idea of sharing from what I've written on the website for the past week and adding my own verbal perspective to that as well. Now, for about a year now, I have been using OneNote. If you haven't tried OneNote, it's a free download for Windows 8. You can download the modern MX OneNote app. Also, if you're on Surface RT, you get Office 2013 RT for free, and it's in there. But OneNote, I used to print out every reference story I used for each show. I used to print them out. I used to have a stack of paper about 2-3 inches thick. Now, I would recycle that paper, but it was still printed out paper, and it really was ended up being just a waste. So once I learned about OneNote and started using OneNote, and I've developed a process now where I can easily share stories to OneNote, and that's where I start to build my show notes from. And now I do it all electronic. I don't have any printed paper. It's all in OneNote and other resources. And I also have a history now. I've been keeping my show notes. In fact, I tell you, since episode 82 was the first time I used OneNote for show notes. And now I just keep it as an archive. So I can go back and look at least through episode 82 on my OneNote for my Observe Tech podcast and look at what I talked about and stuff like that. So that certainly makes it much easier to keep track of the information, to edit it. And then when I prepare my post that go along with this show, there's two posts that go. One goes up on Windows Observer. That's the podcast show page. And then I have at the winobs.com wiki is where I share all the links and stuff like that. Now, another thing that has made a massive difference in being regular and scheduling this show and recording it every week is the fact that I have a separate machine that I call my podcaster. It's a Windows 7 machine, and my gear is set up all the time. I used to break my gear down and set my gear up on my main computer when I needed to record a show. Well, I found that that tended to become a hindrance. It, you know, I'd be tired or a long day of work, and I was just like, you know what, I don't want to mess with it. But now I have a computer constantly set up in the corner of my main office, and all I could do is push the power button, turn on the mic, and I'm ready to record. And that has made a massive difference in getting things set up. So if you're a podcaster and you don't have a dedicated location, if you can afford it and manage it, I would do it because it does make a massive difference. The podcaster machine is also my post-editing machine, so that's where I put together the show in Audacity, and I get everything prepped up. My Windows Home Server 2011 that's in the house houses all my show files, so they're stored there so that I can, when I move to my main machine to finish my notes and upload the file to my server, it's accessible to me very easily via the home network on Windows Home Server. Like I said, I do edit the MP3 files metadata. I use a freeware program called MP3 Edit, and I include things like my name, the show names, the excerpt and show summary for the content of the show, and of course my podcast graphic logo. And MP3 Edit lets me do all those things, saves it to the file, and then the file's ready to be uploaded to the web. Show notes, like I said, were created in OneNote, and that makes it, and the other piece of it is I do it throughout the week. I don't do it all the day before or the day of. I actually prepare my notes throughout the week, so when it's time to sit down and record, it's time to sit down and record and everything's ready to go. The two show pages that I do, the show links on winobs.com, the wiki, and the show page on Windows Observer, you know, has all the data, has all the summary, and I can use OneNote to pull those links and things easily into those two posts, and then I use the same template. I just edit out the information and update it, and it's ready to go. I set both of them to publish at the same time, and then, you know, they're out there on the web for everybody to hear too. Now, I'll tell you why I started WinOBS Wiki. I used to put all the show links in the same page as the show page. And what happened was I started to take a hit on search engine rankings. And I remember Todd Cochran from Tech Podcast Network, from the CEO of Raw Voice. He was experiencing something very similar, and he started a separate wiki. And that kind of got me into the idea. I've had the winobs.com domain for quite a while, so I turned it into my wiki. So not only does my daily tweeted links post get posted there automatically each night of links that I've shared on Twitter, but also I post my show notes there, so, and the links. And that way they stay off of windowsobserver.com. I do put a link in the show page to that post, and so you can reach it easily. But it certainly has made a difference, and it's turned around my search engine rankings as well. So you have to be smart and savvy there. So now there's a little more background on the show, how it comes together. I am looking forward to expanding on my special episodes. I've done a couple of them. That is where I bring somebody in to talk. It's not a normal weekly episode. It's usually in addition to the weekly episode. But I bring them in to talk about your favorite subjects, anything technology related. And I'm really going to work now to bring more of those folks in for more special episodes because they're very popular and people really do appreciate them. Now, the secret code is Observe Tech 100th. Now, this past week, I also received the Nokia Lumia 925 demo review unit, thanks to Nokia Connects. Been putting it through its workout. I'll have a post up this weekend showing off the camera side of things because I took it to Kennedy Space Center this past week to the visitors complex along with my Nokia Lumia 920. So I want to show you the pictures. I took pictures with both phones in certain locations, and sometimes I just took pictures with the single phone. But I want to show you the quality of the photos because the 925 to me kind of appeared to have a wider camera angle and was able to get in more of the scene than compared to the Nokia Lumia 920. It takes some great photos. I've already shared a few via Twitter where I caught a bee up close and didn't even have any blur. And so it's an interesting phone. The build is interesting because this is the phone that has, you know, the front is the glass, the Gorilla Glass. It has the aluminum frame around it, and then it has the plastic backing, kind of a plastic type backing on it. But we'll be talking more. I've got about another 10 days left with the phone before I have to send it back to Nokia Connects, but I'm very appreciative of the fact that they've sent me that phone and allowed me the opportunity to check it out. Currently also waiting to hear about a Nokia Lumia 1020 heading my way for the very same thing for demo and review. Now, the reason I was down at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Center was to participate in a Rogue Space Social. Now, if you've listened to this show before, you know I am a space fan. I'm a NASA fan. I'm a supporter of our space program, our low Earth orbit program, and everything we're trying to do when it comes to space research and study and things of that nature. And so I had an opportunity to go down for 2 days and hang out with a whole bunch of other space geeks that have been on various NASA socials and tweet-ups and events like that. And we came together to spend a couple days down there to check out the new Atlantis exhibit. And let me tell you, even if you are not remotely a space fan, but you like just this kind of stuff, you got to go see Atlantis. They have done an absolutely tremendous job in the space they've built for. They have this massive two-scale external tank and SRBs out front of the building that are as big as they were normal, you know, as you would see them on the launch pad. And then, of course, inside you go in and you see Atlantis sitting there just displayed beautifully at an angle as if she is on orbit. Her payload bay doors are open, and there's just so much stuff around. They've incorporated, if you've ever been there before, they have incorporated the Atlantis exhibit into the shuttle launch experience, so you don't leave the building. You actually go into one and the other easily. They've got some great simulators there where you can practice landing the shuttle or docking the shuttle to the space station or using the Canada arm for doing different things. And these are fairly high-quality demos, and it's just a really neat thing. I mean, I walked in there the first time on Wednesday morning, and I bet you I did not budge from the Atlantis level for over an hour, just walking around and looking at her, taking photos. I will put up photos to my Flickr account, so you all are welcome to see it, but it is something to be experienced in person. You have to go there. You have to see it. It is just something absolutely tremendous. So please take an opportunity to go down there and see that. Now, this, of course, would not be an Observe Tech podcast if we didn't talk about a little of the news from the last week. So here are just a few tidbits that I've pulled together that we wrote about on the Windows Observer website. And one other external link. But first off, shortly after episode 99, I got confirmation. Microsoft made it official. The Microsoft Store is definitely coming to Jacksonville. It's now up on their website. It's coming soon on the Microsoft Store website. They announced it on the official Facebook account for the Microsoft Store. So we had all the indicators that certainly made it look like it was official, but nothing had been officially said by Microsoft to this point. You know, we knew about the building permits. We knew about the job applications that came out in July. But this was the first time a Microsoft entity had said, yes, we're coming. And you can even go to the website, the Microsoft Store website, look for locations, look up Florida, and we are listed there under the Florida listing. So it's coming. We don't have a date yet. I don't think it's going to be before mid-September based on the fact that the Burlington, Massachusetts store is going to open on the 19th of September, and they've already kind of publicized that date on the Microsoft Store Facebook page. So I suspect it will be sometime after that. And based on what I saw a few weeks ago, the building's being sorted out. It's being built. The interior is being done. So, and I did identify the right location. Based on this official announcement, we got the address. So when I suspected which store it was, when I wrote that story up about my own picture I took out there, it turns out that was the location. So it's coming. Just looking forward to it. And if anything, we'll be out there at the grand opening. We will certainly work to hold events with them. But even better is my hope that I get a call for an interview for their community development position, which I've applied for. How about SkyDrive this week? Got a great update. You got photo and sharing and editing related updates that now make it easier to do those things. They continue to make SkyDrive just an awesome, awesome system. But we also had the news this week that Microsoft is going to change the name from SkyDrive because of a lawsuit with the UK company called BSkyB, some movie, TV channel or something like that. And they have settled out of court, basically, but they're giving Microsoft time to make an orderly transition from the name SkyDrive to something else. So here's to hoping they pick a great name. I said it in last week's show in episode 99. SkyDrive is one of those services that is just underrated in the sense that it's a great service. It's continually being updated and enhanced, and it is an absolutely great service. And it's a shame that they've hit this hiccup. This is now the second hiccup they've hit naming related. Last year it was Metro. Remember the German company, you know, and I think that finally settled out of court. But It'll be interesting to see what they choose to change the name to and what they choose to call it besides SkyDrive. This week, they also released the Enterprise Customer Preview for Windows 8.1. And so if you are an Enterprise customer and you want to plan your own deployment of Enterprise 8.1, you can do that. It's available for download. It looks like Microsoft is going to expect everyone to be on 8.1, just like they would expect with the service pack in about 2 years once it's released. So there won't be any holding back. It is a free upgrade. So if you're on Windows 8, it's a freebie, so there's no harm. And it certainly is an enhancement to the system, makes it easier to move around and get around in, and probably will bring a lot of people into the fold for using Windows 8.1 once it comes, because I know a lot of things in Windows 8 have irritated people. Did a story this past week about a great Twitter alternative app that I found for Windows 8 and Windows RT called Halfwit, written by a fellow MVP. It doesn't have a ton of bells and whistles, no push notifications, no live tile, but every minute it updates itself. It has an awesome snap view, and for me, it works terrific on my Windows RT, on my Surface RT, and it really is a terrific app. I mean, again, without all the bells and whistles, it runs very well. It lets me access all the features of Twitter that I want to be able to access, the search, the list, my feed, others' feeds, look at individual users. Just a terrific app, and it's well worth the $1.99 that the developer isn't even asking for. He's got an unlimited trial, and if you like it, you can donate and do the $1.99. The guy put a lot of effort into it. The $1.99 is well worth the deal. Now, on top of that, this past week, Twitter officially updated their Windows 8 app, and it's a good update. They've added list support. Now you can read lists. I guess you can't do much else with them, but you can certainly look at somebody's list and see the tweets from it, and you can also look at your own list. But they also fixed a few niggly issues that were in that. If you remember right, if you used the new Twitter app, the official Twitter app, in a touch environment like on a Surface, it always took two touches to get the proper reaction from a story to like do a retweet or to get that little menu to pop up. And that has been fixed. So it doesn't take two taps to get somewhere. And the pull to refresh works the first time now. It doesn't have to be pulled two or three times to make it work. So Twitter's finally going. I'm still a little bit shocked, though, that there is no there's no streaming in this app. It will update. Updates are kind of irregular. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. Sometimes I have to force it. Other times it works just fine. But there's still no streaming. I don't understand why they don't provide streaming, because the official Twitter app has great push notifications. It has a live tile. It snaps very well. But it lacks streaming. I don't understand why not make that an option to allow you to get the stream, just like we can on most other Twitter app that's available on the desktop and things like that. Then the last piece of news for this week, it relates to Instagram. And there's a whole lot of news last week, exactly, you know, because Instagram updated their API for security reasons, it said, because of spam that was coming into Instagram. And it blocked out third-party apps such as Instance, which was built by Windows Phone developer Daniel Gary, which is a great little app for accessing Instagram. And it was impacting our friend Rudy Hoon, who also created SixSec, which is the Vine app for Windows Phone that allows you to do Vines and see Vines on Twitter's Vine service. Well, Rudy was working on an Instagram third-party app called Sixtagram. And he was also having issues. Well, on Friday morning, he started to do some tweets. Apparently, Instagram reached out to him, and they have been talking, and apparently he is going to send his app to them to be checked out. They're going to look it over for legal reasons, make sure he's not violating any copyrights or anything like that, make sure that it works well and that it doesn't violate any appy aspect, you know, appy things. And it's not going to be an official Instagram app for Windows Phone, but it's also going to be supported by. So, you know, there won't be any automatic kind of shutting the – he's not unofficially accessing the API as he kind of is now or was before. So I think that's a great move forward. I think it's also a strong indication that Instagram isn't anywhere near bringing an official app to Windows Phone. And you can argue the reasons for that over and over again, and they've been argued over the last few days. But I think it's a great move forward for Instagram to reach out to Rudy. I'm not sure if they've reached out to Daniel Gary, though, about Instance, but Rudy's talking about it. They've been on the phone. He's going to ship them his code, and then they will come up and give him feedback on it. And I don't have any doubt that he will ultimately be approved by them for access to the API. So it won't be an official app, but it will be supported by Instagram, because they will know how it's working and how it's accessing the code. There is a private beta going on right now for 6Degram. After a few hiccups last night, Rudy's got it all sorted out, already up to version 1.4, I think, in his beta, which started at 1.0. So it's a closed beta right now, but he will slowly be opening that up before he puts it on for sale. And it's going to be a free download, so it means you can read everything for free, but if you want to upload video, you have to pay for the app at that point. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that app and seeing how this process goes with Instagram for getting it supported. So a terrific set of news. Not everybody is an Instagram person. Not everybody wants that capability, but it helps the platform. It helps the Windows Phone ecosystem because it grows it, because these apps are important to a lot of people. A lot of people see this as an app and a reason why I can't go to Windows Phone. So maybe if there are officially supported by Instagram type of apps, or not endorsed, not the right word, but checked out and okayed by Instagram, then maybe that will help some people make the decision to come join the Windows Phone platform and may have been holding them up before. Okay, so what do you think? Episode 100, I hope you've enjoyed a little bit of the walk down the memory lane and talking about some of our past popular episodes, how we put the show together, the gear we use. And, you know, it was fun for me to, over the last week or so, to look back at the show and, you know, what brought us to episode 100 and how we got here slowly but surely. And I'm just looking forward to the next 100. I'm looking forward to expanding the show's audience. I'm looking forward to doing more of those special episodes with people that you want to hear from. And we're just going to continue to do that kind of stuff. I want to remind everybody that we are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's there, so please check out techpodcast.com. And until we see you next time, I want you to stay safe as we always ask you to. Make sure your antivirus and anti-malware software is up to date, and we will see you at episode 101. Take care.